Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. If you're a regular Friday Night Cliver, you'll know Joseph Norton from Waldron Solicitors and his colleagues. They come in once a month to talk about various legal matters, and it's nice to re-welcome Joseph to the studio this evening. Good evening.
Hello, Clive.
Lovely to see you again. Thank you for joining us. We're going to revisit medical negligence, which is your area of expertise within the business, isn't it?
It is.
And I know we've looked at certain aspects of this before. But what sort of examples do you find that clients want to take a medical organisation to court or pursue legal action? Because, you know, I've said in my introduction earlier on in Paul Essam's programme, the NHS, well, let's just pick on the NHS for an example. But, you know, every department within the NHS, whether it's a hospital, a GP, a dentist, ambulance, NHS 111, they're working flat out. They are human and some things will go wrong. Now, I guess there's a matrix of how much something does go wrong. And again, if a patient feels that there is a, you know, that they haven't had the service that they want, or an operation goes badly wrong, then they seek redress. But, you know, how do you advise clients that you know, come to you and say, look, this went wrong, what can we do?
Well, you are 100% right when you say that mistakes happen. People within the NHS, etc., we're all human. Mistakes happen. Things can go wrong. People tend to seek advice when things do go wrong to see what can be done to put that wrong right. You are also right in saying that there's a matrix or standards below which you wouldn't expect things to go wrong, and above which wouldn't necessarily amount to a claim for negligence. So mistakes happen, things can go wrong. As an example, if you have an operation tomorrow, you'll sign a consent form at some point before the operation. That consent form will contain the details of various risks, complications that you are in effect signing up for before the operation. So pick one at random, an infection. So if during the surgery you have your operation, doctor comes to see you afterwards, everything's fine, but afterwards you develop an infection, or you signed your consent form, you signed up to the risk of an infection, on paper, do you have a claim? Potentially not, because it's a recognised risk, it's a recognised complication of that surgery. So not everyone who has an infection after surgery will have an infection as a result of negligence. It could just be bad luck rather than bad treatment. The difference lies where things haven't been done correctly, and that's where the standards of care come into play. So let's say, for argument's sake, you have your operation, but before the operation, the doctor doesn't sterilise their surgical equipment or doesn't follow the hand washing procedures, and then you develop an infection. In those circumstances, that doctor, by not sterilising the equipment or not following the proper cleaning procedures, has failed to follow the standards expected of a reasonable and responsible body of doctors. As a result, even though you've still had an infection after the surgery, you could potentially claim for negligence because the doctor has failed to do what they should be doing.
How would you prove that, though? Because if you've had your anaesthetic and you're out of it, how do you know whether those tools have been sterilised or not?
Well, the sterilisation of tools, hand washing procedures, it's difficult to prove those types of cases. Ordinarily, in those circumstances, the doctors, nurses, they have what's called a duty of candour. So they're required by law within NHS to be open and honest with patients when things go wrong. So if after the procedure you have your infection, and you say, doctor, what is the cause of this infection? If that doctor knows that they didn't follow the sterilisation procedures, they have a duty to inform the patient as to what's gone wrong. We had a similar example at Dudley. It's been in the press. I've discussed it on the show before, in terms of not sterilising surgical equipment, and that led to various infections across, I think it was 60 to 70 different patients affected by one theatre. In that case, the trust were open, honest. They wrote out to all the patients, recalled everyone, and told them what went on.
Okay, so as you say, there is that requirement. What are the rules any different in if somebody has any private medical treatment or an operation at a private hospital or seeks cosmetic surgery, which again would be done through a private company more often than not?
Not really. As long as the treatment is medical, it shouldn't normally matter the setting in which it's given. The only difference with a private setting, normally, is the methods by which you can obtain compensation. So if it's cosmetic surgery, for example, in a pop-up clinic that disappears a month after you've had your cosmetic surgery, it could be difficult to trace who's responsible and difficult to trace any source of funds for any compensation that you might be entitled to. So that's the only real difference. The standards apply across the medical sphere.
What is generally the success rate of people having a successful conviction? I mean, each case is detailed on its own merits, I understand that. But generally, is it worth doing?
Well, it's difficult to give a proper answer in terms of percentages and win-loss rates because, as you say, every case is determined on the facts. What we can say is the things that we do to screen cases and to explain to people, we can't assist you on this occasion, or you don't have a claim, or you do have a claim because of X, Y, Z reason. So ordinarily when a person calls us, they tend to call us first or contact us via the website. We'd have a chat with them first off, and we can do research, we can review what they say and advise them at that time. We can ask them to lodge a formal complaint. The hospital or GP, dentist, whoever it is, can respond and give that person, the patient, their version of events. We can, again, research and review that complaint response. At that point, we can say to people, you don't have a claim because of X, Y, Z reason, or you do, and we carry on. Then, after that, we'd review the medical records, and again, it can help screen cases and explain what went wrong and why. Sometimes it's not as a result of negligence. If the medical records are supportive of a claim, so it looks like negligence has occurred, then we can look at getting independent medical expert witnesses on board, and he or she would review the patient's records and give us a report letting us know whether or not anything did go wrong. And at that point, we're fairly sure if there's a case or not.
I think it's fair that we should point out here, this isn't all about, you know, getting the knives out and going for the NHS, for example. It's all about seeking redress and giving them an opportunity to put things right and move forward.
It is. The NHS is a great organisation. It provides thousands of pieces of treatment every single day, day in, day out. The vast majority of those treatments don't result in harm, don't result in negligence. On occasions, however, things do go wrong. So it is, like you say, about obtaining people compensation, answers, explanations when things do go wrong, rather than wholeheartedly attacking the NHS across the board. That's not what we're in the business for.
I mean, I have to say, last year I ended up in Kidderminster Hospital having a gastroscopy very, very quickly as well, and I couldn't fault them. I mean, you know, they were fine. The endoscopy nurse that did the procedure was a trainee, but he was very, very heavily supervised.
Yeah.
You know, and everything was fine, so I can't fault them for that.
No.
But what happens if you have to complain or you feel you need to complain about a doctor? And by this, I'm assuming a GP. Because I guess if you're complaining about a doctor within a hospital environment, then the normal complaints procedure would you know, ensue.
Yeah.
But what happens if it's a GP, and what sort of things go wrong in GP surgeries?
Well, to answer the latter question first, in terms of things that can go wrong, the same with hospitals in many ways. So things like not following a patient up or not taking a patient's symptoms properly. So we have lots of cases where people see the GP on 1st of March, see him again on the 1st of April, see him again on the 1st of May. And before you know it, 6 months has passed, you've seen your GP countless times and nothing's been done. And it takes many more months until that person's referred on. They get referred on, they have investigations, and lo and behold, something is found that is serious. And that person says, well, yeah, I should have been referred on months ago. And that can in itself lead to an investigation. So is the treatment delayed? Is the diagnosis delayed? Is the referral delayed? And that all factors back, it all feeds back to that original GP and the GPs who saw that person afterwards as well. Should they have acted on that patient's symptoms sooner? Not reporting test results. So if the GP has a test result from the hospital and it's abnormal, has that GP then communicated that abnormal result to the patient? Have they recalled them? Have they spoken to them and said, this isn't right, we need to do X, Y, Z about it? So that's an example of things that can go wrong. In terms of complaining and what happens, it's similar to the NHS hospital's complaints procedure in that you write to the practice involved. You'd address it to the practice manager, generally, rather than the GPs. It doesn't matter if you do address it to the GPs, but ultimately, it would normally be dealt with by the practice manager. So the practice manager would read through your complaint letter, look at the concerns that have been raised, discuss it with the GP or GPs, or sometimes practice nurses, so that the nurse is based at a GP surgery, and they would investigate and talk about what's happened. At a meeting in-house, and then feedback to the patient via a written complaints letter or a report, and let them know what their version of events are. They have exactly the same duty of candor as other medical professionals, so if they believe that something has gone wrong, they should be letting the patient know. And then after that, sometimes the patient can be invited in for meetings, so they can meet with the doctor. It's much different to meet with someone face-to-face than it is to have a written complaints response. Sometimes it can help. Sometimes it can help put the flesh on the bones and find out exactly what's gone on. Other times people can be, in effect, blinded with science, so it doesn't always help, but that's another option that GP surgeries can sometimes offer.
I guess this can be an expensive game, can't it, really? Well, it's not a game, but you know what I mean, in the sense that, you know, it can be costly to pursue medical negligence claims, and also it can be long drawn out, particularly if you're waiting for evidence or you're waiting for a court slot, for example. That I think can probably sometimes put people off doing it. Again, as we've just said, and you pointed out, each case is handled on its own merits, but you know, roughly how long are we talking? I mean, some of them can go on years, can't they?
Well, most of them are dealt with under a it's the legal term is a conditional fee agreement. The term you might know it by is a no win no fee agreement. So if you don't win, you're not successful, generally you wouldn't pay a fee. If you are successful, your fee's paid out to the compensation you receive. It's set at a percentage, so you know you're always going to end up with some compensation. You're never going to end up out of pocket. But you are right in terms of saying that these can be long-term claims, long-term matters for the people involved. On average, these claims can take 2 to 3 years. A lot of the time is spent waiting, so we apply for the medical records, wait for those, write out to these expert witnesses, wait for them, write out to the defendants, so the trust or the GP, and then wait for a response. And before you know it can easily get to 18 months, 2 years. And then we can look at settling it if liability is admitted and resolved. And again, 2 to 3 years is about an average timescale for this type of case.
How do you manage, as a firm of solicitors, your clients' expectations? Because they will come to you, this happened. I want that person's, head on a plate kind of thing, or that trust or that hospital or whatever.
Yep.
And they're going with it with, quite a preconceived idea that I'm going to get money out of, that trust or whatever it is. How do you manage clients' expectations when actually you turn round, as you were saying very much at the beginning, and you actually say, well, no, you've signed the consent form, you don't have a claim?
Detailed responses, detailed explanations as to what's gone on, and if there is no case, there are detailed explanations as to why. Most people who come to us, The compensation involved isn't the primary focus. It is handy, certainly if quality of life has been affected, if earnings have been affected. For example, if someone can't work as a result of negligence, it's pretty much essential in lots of cases to maintain reasonable quality of life. So it's essential in some cases, necessary, appropriate, etc. But the vast majority of people who come to us want answers and they want explanations. Sometimes a complaints procedure wouldn't get them the level of information that they need and want. And these are sensitive cases. They can be life-changing cases. So that's when a solicitor comes in. And it can help take the emotion out of it for that person. So I can be a conduit for that person to communicate with the trust and get the answers that they want and that they need. I find it helps the people by having that disconnection between what they've gone through and finding out what's happened and why.
Waldron's, as a firm, you don't just handle medical claims and things like that. You do all sorts of legal things. Just give me some idea of some of the things. I know you do conveyancing and I know you do wills and probate, but what other things do you handle as a firm?
We do. So I'm in charge of the compensation department, so as well as clinical negligence, we do personal injury. The conveyancing department you just mentioned, so buying, selling houses, moving home. The probate department who deals with wills, trusts, powers of attorney, all that kind of stuff. Commercial department dealing with commercial transactions, corporate work as well, telecoms work, crime, care, family, so family matters, children matters, divorces, financial matters upon divorce as well. Pretty much the full range of legal services you expect from a high street firm.
So for somebody who's listening thinking, you know, yes, I had an operation recently and, you know, I don't think it's gone well or there is a problem, what should be the first step that they take then to pursuing a case for medical negligence?
The first step, the best first step to take is always to take specialist advice at an early stage. So there's ways of finding out if you're dealing with a specialist clinical negligence lawyer or not. There are what's called accreditations with the Law Society, which Waldron's have for clinical negligence. You speak to a specialist firm of solicitors like ourselves and get advice as to what's gone on. So it would be an initial telephone call, 15, 30 minutes, however long it takes, in essence, to find out what's gone on, and we can advise you in terms of the best first steps in your individual case. It can vary, depends on the circumstances, but the best first step is always to reach out and seek some advice. It's completely free of charge, there's no obligations, and it helps start the ball rolling when you think that something might have gone wrong.
Where can we find out more information, Joe?
So two main ways in finding that out. If people want to call, they can call on our main number, which is 01384 811 811, or via the website, which is www.waldrons.co.uk.
Joseph Norton from Waldron Solicitors, thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Clive. That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 6:00 p.m. And if you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by me, Clive Payne, and produced by Andy Caddick.